Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Hi, Jessica.
June,
how are you?
You know, you said when we were just testing levels, et cetera, that you are fully caffeinated right now and like ready to rumble. And
yeah.
I want to just tell you that
yeah.
I'm in the opposite place. I'm so scared because I had two, not one, but two margaritas last night.
Oh, wow. So you're taking it easy, and margaritas are really your kryptonite. They are your kryptonite.
I've said this before. I'm always living with the knowledge that I'm one margarita away from destroying a life I've worked very hard for.
Where'd you have these?
So I had these at a place that Casey found, which is a hotel / restaurant that's mostly outdoors, which is why it's perfect for this, you know, post-COVID time. And they were delicious. Now, here's what I'm struggling with. Like, I think I'm reacting more this morning and last night to the sugar than to the tequila.
Listen, who's to tell? But do you regret it?
I don't like the way I feel today.
Okay, but did you like the way you felt last night?
I did. I did.
Worth it.
I get one of those coursing through my system and I'm like, I believe I can fly.
Yeah.
I believe I can touch the sky. Like
yes.
I felt, and I want to say this, what a social elixir. Like, again, I'm rusty out there. I'm rusty out there talking to people.
Oh, wait till you hear. You don't know rusty till you know my rusty.
I believe you to be one of like the most socially intelligent and lubricant people. Like I feel like you could talk to anyone.
When I tell you that at this school picnic, BB said to me, Amma, don't take this the wrong way, but maybe you should stop talking to parents and just stand quietly for a while by yourself. I don't know. First of all, I rolled in like an entirely beige outfit, like a beige palazzo pant. And I thought, I'm just going to just try something different. And then
it's hard to test that out at a school function.
Here's the deal. It was outside and people were going maskless, the adults, for the first time, which I didn't expect. And I was okay with, but I have not seen the lower half of people's faces ever. These are people I don't know pre-pandemic. And so I was so thrown because we make an idea in our head of what we think the bottom half of somebody's face is. And then what they reveal is something very different. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a pleasant surprise. It's not that I'm disappointed or not. It's just, it's like when you first saw Casey Kasem. Do you remember Top 40?
Casey Kasem. I don't know if I have. Now I have like a version of him in my head that's like, I want to say Danny DeVito, but
he's short. Okay, he's short.
Short.
But you know what he looks like now.
Yes.
He had like a little boy's haircut and he was very short. Casey Kasem was probably, for a lot of our listeners, they don't know, but he did the Top 40
our whole life.
Countdown on Sundays, and he has this beautiful melodic voice. But then when you see him, like I was kind of turned on by Casey Kasem. Like I could see myself with a Casey Kasem. You know, he
was an archetype for us of like, that's an adult male.
If
you know?
The world was falling apart, if
we
there was the threat of nuclear war, like Casey Kasem was going to take us through the Top 40. And then when you see what he looks like almost like a puppet, like one of those, not marionettes, but a ventriloquist puppet. Like a man that you could put on
right
your,
now.
You could put him on your, it's not important. You could put him on your lap. And that's what he was when I finally saw it. It was a shock. Well, that's what's happening to me. So anyway, there was one mom who I have spoken to 20 times. I texted with her as recently as Friday. I see her on a Sunday. She doesn't have a mask on. She's got glasses on and a hat. And okay. I panic.
Weekend
and
at Bernie's vibe. Yeah.
100.
Did you call her Weekend at Bernie's?
Of course not. I've already been shamed out of that. Okay. No, but I panicked. First, I said very frantically, do you have a child's mask I could borrow? Because I thought I knew who it was. And I thought it was the person that she is. And she said, yes. And I was like, because I forgot BB's. And then like BB was like, I don't want to wear somebody's dirty mask. I'm like, it's not dirty. Put it on. And then I panicked and thought, I don't know this woman. And so I said, I'm sorry. Hi, I'm Jessica. And she goes, it's Lisa. We texted on Friday. And then I was like,
Can you please remind me of the story? I hope you can tell it on this podcast of when you and Dan went to that couple's house. Please tell it. Please tell it.
Wait, I want to back up. The second thing I did that was so strange is that this one mom, I've never seen her face again. And I had pictured her mouth as really small and like maybe not that she was not like a full smiler like I am. Like she's a serious person. You know, she's okay. A serious job. This woman took her mask off and I went, wow, your teeth. Wow. And she
Jessica St. Clair.
She had these pearly whites. It was like a blinding,
like horse teeth.
No, beautiful smile.
Okay, like a Julia
that
Roberts,
lights up a room.
Yeah,
like she should have been on the silver screen. And I screamed out, "Your teeth! My God, look at you!" Okay, but the story about Dan and I—we had just moved to LA and how awkward was I and still am, but I was really awkward. I didn't have any friends and neither did he. And he had met this guy and they had invited us over. And I said, okay. So it was our first dinner party that we'd been invited to. And I was really, really trying my best. And I came over and it was a bit awkward. It was an awkward group. And there were this couple that were hosting us and then another guy, but it was he had what I call a ghost wife, which is somebody who doesn't really speak that much. And it's almost like she's an ethereal presence, could pass through walls, maybe. We don't know what her job is. We don't know. She's just sort of there, but not there. And I wanted to drill down. I didn't know who the wife was. That's the problem, is I couldn't tell who, but I didn't want to ask, are you the host? Are you not the host?
Yes.
And so I wanted
you
to drill down.
Seamlessly enter like you belong. Yeah.
Right. So
and I also think you were doing something which, you know, I find this sometimes, especially I've felt this a lot with Paul, where if I'm out with him and he's being introduced to someone or someone knows who he is and he knows someone, I will stand there and there's a dismissal of women.
Oh, like, that's interesting. Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Of just like, oh, I know him and I'm assuming you're his wife. And that's where your identity ends. And
right.
And I don't need to know anymore. And so I feel like you, and I do this too, I make a really conscious effort to understand who the women are in the space.
That's right. And to find out what makes you tick. Like, I get it. I get it. Your husband is a writer.
I get
whatever.
Who you are in relation to him, but I want to know
who you
are. Yes.
What are your fears and dreams and bucket lists? You know, because I will tell you, very few people are going to bore me because they got something. They got something. And I'm going to drill down in within 30 to 60 seconds on what
and
that
men
thing is.
Very rarely ask questions of women.
100%. So anyway, I see this woman. And again, what was the story? I assumed that she was the friend and that another person was the wife.
You were waiting. Yes. So
I don't really remember.
You had walked in and you had made an assumption about like who was who. And you thought you knew who Ghost Wife was. And you thought like, oh, that's Ghost Wife over there. Okay. And then there's this other couple. Now, this is an important detail. A lot of time went on. You're there.
It was like
you're
an hour
eating.
Plus.
You were there for quite
a
while.
It was dessert. It was yes. post-dessert coffee.
Yes. And then you said to her, now, let's say the couple's name is like Becky and John. You turn to her and say, now, how are you related to Becky and John? How do you know them? And she said, basically, like, I'm Becky. Like, this is my
home
you're in, that you've been in, that I'm hosting you in. It was just such a wild misstep. And again, the most important piece is how long you were there for.
That's right. And that she was also curled up on the couch. And I was making this assumption, you know these people so well,
that you feel like you can really get comfortable here.
And take your shoes off.
Yes.
And so are you old college friends? Are you a former lover? Like, what is this? And Dan just shakes his head like, you know, it's always like he says, I say the one last thing to the waiter that makes it weird.
Or we got through it and it was really fun. It. Yeah.
Or like, except just order the guacamole. Don't say like, you know what? I'm going to rock the wok. And then like, they just like freeze. One time there was a Chinese restaurant we used to go to in New Jersey, and they used to call my dad. We went like every Sunday. They used to call my dad the $6 million man because he did look like that guy who played the $6 million man. Okay. And they would say, and the $3 million children, me and my brother. And, you know, we were regulars. Everyone loved us. My father is just so gregarious. And one time the waiter, our regular waiter came, and my dad said, boy, it looks like you're growing some facial hair. Wow, or something like that. And he looked ashamed and he disappeared and we never saw him again. And to this day, and then the place burned down.
Oh my God. Did that young man burn down the place?
It was called Hunan Garwood. And it was, people didn't know if it was arson. There was talk that it was arson. And we always said, Dad, like, you did this to him. What did you do? Because it was clear he wasn't trying to grow the facial hair. And I don't know if he was ashamed of it. But again, it's like, why are you mentioning that?
Here's what I appreciate about the St. Clair's, though. And, you know, I have this experience, too. But I think you're much more comfortable in this space where you want to see where the boundaries are. You want to see, like, what we can get away with and fuck.
Yeah. We take like, big swings. We take big swings.
And they're not all going to connect.
No. No, and you also know? We don't think, you know, Lennon and I were just talking about like the fights that she was like, what was the first fight we had? And we're going to have Lennon on, of course, but what was the first fight we had? And I said, well, I remember because it's the same fight we always have, which is that I speak before thinking and I go rogue. I make decisions without asking her. These are big business decisions. And I say we're on board or I say yes to something. And she wants to be consulted or at least informed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we keep having that. And I said, you know what? We're a lot like Lethal Weapon, you know? And she goes, A, don't say that because Mel Gibson, and you haven't seen it. And she's right. But what I imagine it to be is that Mel Gibson really goes kind of off the cuff and Danny Glover is more of a thinker, like Lennon. Right. Is that right?
I don't know. I also haven't seen it. Or I've seen it and I've forgotten it. But I think that's your sort of classic buddy cop comedy.
Yeah, it sounds
right. I think those are,
And Mel Gibson is the Lethal Weapon, I think.
Listen, I think they don't work, you know, without each other. And that's the moral of the story. Oh my God, Jess, that makes me laugh so hard.
No,
how do you know? How do you fit in here? I am here. You're here because I'm here.
I was like, wow. I also remember their house because they had no sign of children. They had children, but there was no sign of them anywhere. And I said, I didn't have kids yet. Like, how do you do that? And she said, well, at the end of the night, I go around and I hide every toy. I put them away in baskets and buckets. And I thought, I'm going to do that. I mean, are you fucking kidding me?
I've never done that.
Never.
I wanted to ask you, one of the things I was thinking about before we started today was cleaning, organizing. And I want to get, this is something I really want to get right with, because if I were really to break down, like, how much of my day is this fraught dance of, like, I hate that things are disorganized. Like, I can't think until this kitchen is cleaned. Like, there's fucking shit everywhere. Like, why is there there's so much of that, right? Yes. And then there's the other voice, which is like, I don't want to spend my time fucking cleaning.
Yes.
I want to live.
And enjoy your time, and because you're working all the time too. You're like working and then cleaning. And it's like, where is the relaxation? But you can't relax when you're sitting in a dirty fucking kitchen and living room.
Really?
And I want to have a system. I've dreamed of a chore wheel. And I have a husband who refuses. He's like, never will you put me on a chore wheel.
I'll never, never spoke on a chore wheel.
Never will he. Never will
Wow.
And so I'll never have it. I want to know whose turn is it and when. And can't we have a thing where somebody, I remember Meryl Streep said in an article that whenever you see something at the bottom of the stairs, pick it up and bring it upstairs. Everyone needs to be responsible
for that. Needs to be bringing stuff upstairs. Yeah. So, and we do have a set of stairs that I do try to put things at the bottom of so that I can just easily take them on my way.
But does anybody else bring them upstairs except for you?
I live with a neat freak. And I'm Paul Scheer would be every spoke on that wheel.
And that's a dream. And it's not like I'm really neat and Dan's dirty. Neither of us want to do it. And yet he'll say things like, I'll be like, how is this kitchen look insane after only 3 hours? He'll go, babe, chop wood, carry water. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Every day you got to chop that wood and carry that water. I'm like, well, could we make a system where I know I'm chopping wood and you're carrying water? And he says, absolutely not. And then walks away.
And here's the thing, but I want to return to chop wood, carry water, because I know that scratches an itch for me too.
When I love it if, like, someone left me alone to clean a closet.
Well, that's the other thing. Now I'm like, it would be a dream for me to be left in my closet to organize it for 2 hours. Like, I would actually love to do that. But I just want to quiet down this fraught, like, these competing voices, which are really like, when I see that we are living in mess, what comes up for me is so, because I also grew up in a messy house,
but
and I was embarrassed about it.
And I grew up in a Martha Stewart magazine level organization, but I rebelled against that. And so in reaction to that, I'm like, fuck it. I can leave my shit everywhere. But also I grew up in a clean house. So I'm embarrassed of it.
Wow, that's fascinating. Well, because what comes up for me is, like, if I see a mess or I feel like I'm living in mess or not able to get it together, the voice that creeps in is like, you can't do it like the rest of them can do it.
Yeah. Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, you cannot get your shit together, June.
See, and I would think you had a clean house all the time. Here's the other thing that we really fuck ourselves.
You might come over and say that. Like, I don't know. But what I do know is, like, there's probably breakfast plates that are still out there.
Right. And
it's 1 o'clock, folks, deep divers. It's 1 o'clock. And I'm like, the morning got away. And also what got away was like, and every day it gets away. Also what got away was like, I come home from drop off. Sam, our youngest, has to get picked up to go to his preschool. Paul jumps on a call and I'm like, I want to start working. Like, I want my time. And my time that I want is not doing those breakfast plates. But then I'm like, when it is my time, I'm still with the breakfast plates. Like, I'm still with them.
My mother, that was her work. Her joy and work was keeping a beautiful home. And she volunteered, and she is literally, my mother has never laid down during the day. But the idea of a nap is, she'd never take one, never.
Wow.
But like, that also was her passion and her joy, was keeping this beautiful house, and she did it. But I do think asking yourself to have a full-time job and have a house that looks perfect, this sounds so boring. How many times have you heard this? It's something has to give. You can't have both.
It is impossible. And believe me, I did ask Paul for more money allotted for our housekeeper, and he did agree to that. And I feel like it's, folks, and deep divers, I really want you to hear this. If you have the means, I really do believe this is something you struggle with, that outsourcing is, if you can afford it, is a very wise investment. Because I do feel like that's an investment in a marriage.
Oh, 100. And you know, I have a hard time spending on those things.
I know you do.
It's necessary. And the more you outsource that you, first of all, I remember one of my many self-help books, I think it was You Are a Badass at Making Money. It was reminding yourself that when you spend, if you give somebody a job to come in and help you with your organization or your house or your food, whatever it is, you're putting money out there. It's a good thing. Every time we're spending and help, you know, then that person has money and it's all a good exchange and flow. But we think, I do believe that our generation of women, and maybe it's the youngers, but I don't think so, we say we should be able to do both. And we are failing.
We're still caught in that. And we can say on an intellectual level, and that's also why I've resisted. I resist these things for so long because I resist homemaking, even though there are things about it that I love. I don't love cooking, but I do love hosting. I love hosting a party. I love having people over. I love all that stuff. But I'm like, I resist a lot of homemaking because our generation is caught in that. We're like just on the edge of really being able to pull back and understand, oh, this system is set up so that we fail. Like, there's no way this works. There's no way. And I can intellectually say that and understand it. But when the breakfast plates are there, I'm still having an emotional reaction.
Me too.
I'm still tying self-worth in a way that I promise you, Paul Scheer is not tying his own sense of self to whether those plates are in the dishwasher or not. I just promise you he's not.
I 100%. And I want for BB to have a house that is orderly too, because I do think it affects, as it affected you, I think it affects you when your exterior does mirror your interior, right? Yes.
Well, and I knew it would collapse my mother. That was more the thing. I wonder if I would have actually been upset about it, but I knew it was very upsetting to my mom that she felt she could never get the house decluttered, you know, in shape. And my father was also working on our house forever. So like rooms were cut off and under construction. And like we had one working bathroom where the toilet worked, but then you had to shower in the basement. I mean, there were just so many.
Yeah, and there were three
picadillos.
Girls.
And there were three girls. And so I think I took on her experience. But it is hard because at the end of the day, I know people say like, oh, I'm messy. I'm neat. Both are fine. And the truth is, I'm going to say this. Maybe it's controversial. It's better to be orderly. I'm sorry.
It is.
It's fucking better.
You feel better.
It's better.
I know. And I'm trying. Listen, how many different subscription programs can I be a part of? But
I want to know what your monthly nut is that you're putting out.
I don't want to talk about it, but the school of self-image is saying you need to live like your future self and that your insides reflect your outsides. And so like my future self that I want to be is organized and does know where their shit is and does chop wood, carry water. But you do have to put that time in. Those dishes ain't going to do themselves.
No. You know, I would watch Brooklyn Decker show up on set and I would sit in her trailer and it was just always like organized.
It was nice in
there. Oh, yeah.
Candle lit.
And just like a healthy respect for herself, you know, and
I
her own surroundings.
That.
Yeah.
You're that person. That's shocking to me because I look at those people like wild animals. That's why I crept down to Kulop's bedroom and looked at her vanity. And she recently sent me a photo of her new vanity. And it's like insane. It's all decanted. Everything's decanted.
You know, I have everything's decanted.
You know what I'm saying?
Of course, I know what you're saying. I have always felt, now I think a part of this is because I was my full height, which is 5'9", at age 11. I've always felt.
So is BB. God bless.
She's going to be tall.
God,
she's gonna be a tall woman.
Bless.
There are,
she towers.
Such, I know she does. I was looking at a picture that Dan posted.
She towers
of her, and I
over
was like,
every
child. Oh,
she looks like a 16-year-old person in a child's body. I don't know what.
But I was the same. And unfortunately, my parents had my hair cut awfully short too, which was like so terrible. There was
Have you
one
seen
weekend,
the photo I just posted? We got to do a side by side.
I loved it so much. So my dad, my mom went away on some sort of conference and we were left home alone with my dad for the weekend and he decided to cut our bangs.
That's so crazy.
Okay?
What was
he
thinking? He
decided to cut all of our bangs. And they were, you know, like these sheet bangs above the eyebrow when we were when he started. And he's trimming. And then he needs to straighten it out. He needs to straighten it out. We were left with like half an inch.
My God.
So there are some really tough pictures of me from like first and second grade where I arguably should have been my cutest, where I was giant, Jess. I was as tall as my first grade teacher. Now, she was elderly and very small, but when you look at the class picture, I'm standing up next to her. And my experience was like, I'm big. I'm a big girl. And I want to be small and cute, but
okay.
I'm so big.
I understand.
And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm big not only in the physical sense of things, but in feeling like an emptied out purse a lot of the time.
What do you mean by that?
And I see these other girls. I mean, not having my shit together.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got
it. Do you know what I
mean?
Now, I also had parents who just like, you know, there was dysfunction going on and like not everybody was paying attention to everything. And so I was trying as an elementary school child to organize a lot of that for myself and failing and not having the right things and wanting to have the right things. And I have this distinct memory of going on a flight. I was in drama school and I must have been like a sophomore or junior in high school. And we took an overnight flight to London. It was the big theater trip at the end of the year. And I woke up after falling asleep and I was like angry, just like tired and disgusting. And like, I didn't know what to pack because I don't know things. I'm like, my hair was matted.
Yeah.
And I watched this girl, her name was Vanessa.
Of course it was
Vanessa.
She
was like an aisle away from me, my age. And I watched her pull out from her little like mini backpack.
Yeah.
Hand sanitizer.
Sure. Some moisturizer.
Bath and Body.
A little
like Apple.
A miniature brush. And she brushed out her hair.
Mouthwash.
Yep. A little spray of like rose water.
And it was such a hinge moment for me where I was like, you know how, you know what to bring. You know how to have those things. This is like weirdly vulnerable for me to say, but I really wanted, I didn't know how to get there. You know,
but you're
I didn't
there.
Have the tools.
It's so, I think people are going to be shocked, June, because
I'm
shocked.
But when
to
I
hear
was
this.
Around those girls, and this extends even till now, I will say, when I'm around certain people, and even being in Brooklyn's trailer, I feel my experience is like I'm an emptied out purse. Like I'm disorganized, you know, and it's
your eye makeup would say otherwise. That's I think really, and I don't mean to keep going back to it, but like really, like the fact you always have your face on to me screams you've got it together. And I actually feel, to be honest, that I present as somebody who the first thing out of my mouth is always, oh, I look like I climbed out of a pile of dry leaves. Like, look at me, I'm a mess. Because I want to disarm people.
Interesting.
I want people to never feel that I am better than them. Or like, my sole purpose in life is to make every single person in the room like me. And not like me like, oh, look at me, I'm so funny. And like, I want them to know, like, I'm like a rescue dog that flips over on their belly, like immediately.
Meatball. Yeah, that's
like
meatball.
Like, oh, please, I'm not a threat. Like, don't think I'm not a threat. You know,
I'm not here for your man.
I'm not here for your man. And like, I might have my period right now and I don't have the right tampon. Like, I'm just like, don't worry, I'm weird too. And that has served me really well making girlfriends because that is how we bond. Yes. You know, usually it's to say, I'm a mess, you are too. Now we're bonded. Now, if you say, I'm a mess, and the other person says, I'm not, period, then that's where's the connection there, right?
Yes, I hear that.
I'd like to stop saying I look like I climbed out of a pile of dried leaves, because also that's not a high vibration. And I don't need to disarm people. Like, no, I don't need to say I'm a mess so that you will like me.
Yeah, you don't need to make the space any smaller. Like, there's space. Yeah. You really don't. We
and
do not need
person,
to make ourselves small. Nope.
I would make myself small. I would kind of hunch over. I don't want you to, like, think that, you know, think I'm taking up too much space. Now, listen, I can come in with my shoulders back and looking like I've got a great outfit on, but I'm still going to scream out, look at those teeth. Like, I'm never going to not make it strange. So, like, I don't need to worry.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Well, yeah. It is fascinating though. Like, and I feel like Heidi talks about this a lot. Like, and that's why I found astrology really helpful, because what we present is often not, or how the world perceives us and what's really natural to us in some ways is not always what our interior life feels like. And I'm not saying I always feel this way, but it is a narrative. It is something that I knew I needed help. I wasn't getting help with when I was a child. And I didn't feel like I could ask the people in my life to help me get there, even though it was something I wanted. Because I, as a child, was like, oh, these two wonderful people that I love are surviving. And I'm such a Capricorn 7-year-old that I don't want to put on them. You know what I mean? And so I actually could take care of myself pretty well because of who I am.
Right.
But there was a level when I saw other women have it, when I saw the ease at which they knew how to have their things and take care of themselves and have those sort of healthy, you know, experiences of self-respect in their space that I really coveted and desired.
I felt very different personality-wise from my mother. Like, we're very similar in some ways, but we're very different. And I didn't feel, I keep saying this, and you keep saying you're very feminine and whatever, but I think that there was a very masculine energy to me.
Hope I'm not going to be called masculine again today.
I feel it from you sometimes.
You said it so many times.
I know, because listen, you know, like I had my father gave me a gigantic, you know, catcher's mitt. Like I was, you know, raised in many ways, like not a boy, but I guess so. And so like, for me, it was like, that world is not for me. The world of knowing how to put on moisturizer and take long baths is not for me. I'm out there surviving. I got a dead tooth. You know, I gotta get funny. My boobs never arrived. You know, it's like, I gotta get skills.
We gotta pivot.
I gotta get skills. And so I'm never gonna be that girl. But like, I want to be her in my 40s. You know, I really want to like get my shit together. And I think it is possible, but we have to say, like, I'm going to take it a little slower. I'm going to take the time to do the dishes right now. I'm going to take the time to put my clothes away. I'm not just going to like run about my life like it's like a 5-alarm fire. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I have a poem I need to share with you that actually speaks to this. I have another surrogate mom, Pam Fryman, who I don't know if you've ever met, one of BB's. She's one of the most, I would say, the most talented sitcom director living.
Yes, she's
today.
A legend.
A legend. Now, what was so weird is when my other surrogate mom was dying, Pam is also very good friends with her. So I had my one surrogate mom next to me alive. The other one was dying in the same room. It was very, it was very, very intense. Okay, so I woke up the other day and she sent me this, and it was actually on the birthday of my mom, my second mom who passed, Lila. And it says, all that really matters in life is feeling good, is being alive to your life while you have it. There is always going to be hardship or circumstances outside of our control or unwieldy emotions or demands on our time and attention, but we must not wait for life to slow down, to slow it all down. We must demand that it does. We must carve out little pockets of joy in our ordinary days. We must find sunshine. We must learn to rest without feeling guilt about resting. It's so important to know that what makes you feel good, to know what you must do each day to keep yourself feeling well. We must stop glamorizing, neglecting our well-being as a sacrifice for more achievement, to consume more, to have more, to be insatiable. We must recognize that life is happening now, whether we're noticing it or not. And if we don't take time out of the frantic nature of life to stop, pause, enjoy, savor, slow down, then a day becomes a week, becomes a month, becomes a whole life missed. Notice your life. Be alive to it all. Stop waiting for the savoring. You've done enough. Enjoy it for a while.
Wow.
And this is from Jamie Yaron. And that's it.
That's it. All right.
Pam is the busiest person in the world, but God damn it, she puts on a spread. I mean, every time I come out, there's
for you, beautiful... it all comes back to a spread, doesn't it?
Kind of.
Whether you can have a spread, what kind of spread, the nature of the spread, how quickly you can put together a spread.
Yeah, because sometimes I'll be like, I'm around the corner. And she's like, come on over. But there you go. She's got lemonade on ice that were, you know, and she's got a hot, you know, I think she has like a roll of cookie dough in the freezer at all times.
Wow.
She can slice and bake. You know, she threw together the most beautiful baby shower. It wasn't even a baby shower. It was like a baby lunch. And we came out and there were daffodils in these little glass bottles. And I always am like remarking, but here's the deal. It took Pam time to do that. Mm-hmm. It's not like it just appeared. She's not fucking Samantha from Bewitched. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's not like this woman doesn't work harder than both of us. Mm-hmm. So she's taking that. She's saying, I'm worth it. My friends are worth it. And the little moments of a daffodil in a glass bottle are worth my time. And she's making time for it because arguably that's more important than any of it.
I love that. And I feel like in some ways this podcast is reminding me to slow down. I hope it's doing that for you too, deep divers, because it is sort of, I don't know. I feel like these conversations are helping me. That poem is so beautiful. Remember, and not to take it into politics, but I will, like, it's helpful for me as an act of resistance against a capitalist system that doesn't value humans. I mean, I'll say it, a capitalist system that has set us up to fail and that I think, you know, is deeply harmful in many ways. It is an act of resistance to say, no, I'm stepping off the fucking hamster wheel. I'm stepping off the chore wheel too. And I'm going to...
Oh, don't throw the chore
wheel. I'm sorry about that, Jess.
Paul and I are so well suited in so many ways.
I'm going to do some moment to moment work here.
Well, and that's why I love France. And, you know, I'm my best self in Europe, which you're going to about to see me again emerge, you know, now. Pandemic Europe. I don't know what that's like, but... Part
of it
is
in the belly of the beast. Like, you and I have done it completely wrong. We've both left LA when, like, we should stay. And I went into Toronto, which when I arrived immediately went into lockdown. You're going to England, like, where it's pretty bad.
Things are seeming to take a turn.
Yeah, we're doing great here in Los Angeles.
I know. I'm really interested to see how this shakes out. But when I go over there, you know, because everybody is asleep when I'm awake, I feel like I'm not part of that capitalist society. I don't have to do anything because I should be asleep. And here I am awake. And so I do things
so
like I have long
gravy,
lunches.
Yeah.
Everything's gravy. I have long lunches. I walk through the heath. They have in England, they do have a connection to nature that I believe we don't have. They're very close to pastoral settings. You know, of course, London is an enormous city, but they do get out to see it, I think, more than we do. And in France, of course, you know, they do value all of those things more than us. The shopping, the daily, they go shopping every day in France.
I know. They go to market.
They go to market and they go to the cheese shop and you have to wait in line for a long time because the cheese man is going to ask you questions. When are you going to eat that cheese? What are you pairing it with? And I want that so much. It's very hard to bring back here.
It is. But I do think that I'm going to really sit with that poem and
I'll post it too.
Yeah, please. Yep. And I am going to really focus on, you know, as for me, also an act of resistance against capitalism, like divorcing myself from the, you know, chaos of the day unapologetically. I really want to work on that.
Because we're
going
to be dead.
And
soon.
We will always remind you of that, Deep Divers. We will always, every episode, we will remind you that you will be dead. We will be dead. We're all going to be dead. So let's enjoy it. Honestly, that's one of the reasons why I've loved having a dog, because it forces me to walk outside the house and look around. Now, am I listening to Dateline podcasts about horrible crimes?
I don't understand. I'll never understand that.
Murders.
I'll never understand it. Never. And I don't want to talk about it.
I know it's a strange way to relax to the sounds of the Menendez brothers.
I don't want to talk about who they are or what they did. I don't want to know.
Crisp detail how they murdered.
I don't want to hear it. Stop talking about it.
But I also look at the leaves when I look at the house.
It's so weird.
It's definitely, you know, there are some competing experiences there. But I do love that it forces me to kind of stop, you know, as children do too.
This is what I'm going to bring it back to. I'm going to swing it around and say, this is my challenge to everyone. Okay.
Okay.
I want us to, in the next week, try this out for size, which is to let yourself shine. Mm-hmm. I don't want us to dampen ourselves in any way. So I want you to show up wearing whatever you want and not think, oh, they're going to look at me, or be as loud as you want, or savor that moment, you know, say, fuck it. I'm not doing that thing. I'm going to sit home. I want you to like be purely, purely yourself and don't sit down.
Oh, sweetie, you're saying this to me. I don't have a problem there.
Nope. You don't.
I don't. You know, I do show up to shine, despite the inner monologue that I just shared
with
everyone.
It's even more of inspiration because you pushed through that. Never would have known that wasn't inner monologue of yours. Mm-hmm. Never would have known that.
Absolutely.
But I would have, because you wouldn't come to comedy unless you had something
like
that made you feel other.
Star of like, can I be that woman who has the tool set and the time and the care for herself to do all that, to have like to pack a mini bag and to know what to pack?
We can learn these things.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Well,
we have to take the time to do it. And we have to say, I'm worth it.
And in some ways it's a reparenting, you know, it's like, okay, I didn't necessarily get all the skills that I needed. Like, okay, I can parent myself. And you've also said something, and we got to wrap it up because we have a wonderful conversation coming up that I'm so excited to share with you all. But I will say that something that I've been listening to you say over the few weeks and hearing about your surrogate moms, like, I love that you have other mothers in your life. And
because mine is so far away.
I know. Yeah. Well, mine's...
Yours
in the
is
ground.
Dead still. Yeah. she's taken, as the St. Clairs like to say, a dirt nap.
Exactly.
That's terrible. That's what they say.
I mean, it's true.
It's terrible.
But I think I've denied myself surrogate moms. And I think I'm really going to put the call out like I'm in the market.
Well, you have to do is kind of start looking, because they're there.
Yeah.
And you know what's so lovely is their daughters don't mind that I share them.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, the one I really do feel I have is Jane Fonda. I mean, I know
it's
a crazy surrogate mom to have, but that's the one I do feel I have.
Yes. Yes. And that's a lot. One might say one Jane Fonda is equal 15 surrogate moms, but okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Deep Divers, thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited to share this incredible conversation we are about to have with our first male-identified guest, which is a thrill. Please, please enjoy this week's conversation with Kyle Bornheimer.
Deep divers, welcome to our interview with Kyle Bornheimer. Kyle and I have been married on screen.
Yeah.
Multiple times. Mm-hmm.
The world wants to see this pairing and has asked for it multiple times.
And we've given
times.
It to them.
And yes, we've given it to them. Yeah. We have been
You haven't
brother,
kept it away from us.
He has been my brother-in-law. He has been my boyfriend.
Wow.
He is currently my husband mm-hmm. in space.
Mm-hmm. I'm just glad he's hasn't been your child.
My estranged.
Because I don't put that past
Nobody
Hollywood.
Wants that. Yeah. But Kyle
I've been your rabbi.
Kyle, you were my rabbi.
Yeah.
Turned boyfriend.
Yeah.
That was weird. Kyle is one of the kindest people I have ever met. He was one of my first friends, if not my first friend in all of Los Angeles, my first new
wow.
friend. When we were doing She's Out of My League in stuck in Pittsburgh for a couple months. And he's one of the kindest. Kyle and I have been in these fake relationships so long that we have a long list of things that are both he and I would be in couples therapy about.
Yes.
And also are the couples that we play on screen are in therapy
about. Would
you
about. Feel we've worked things out in our
yes.
real life via our relationships on camera?
We are
definitely this latest one. Yeah.
We are as emotionally in sync as yeah. a retired couple in Boca oh. Raton now, because we've had to rely on each other in extremely stressful circumstances. Mm. Like this one, Avenue 5, you know, Armando Iannucci created it. You know, we were very nervous because it's a lot of it is improvised.
Yeah.
The process of creating your characters.
And that's a high profile.
Huge.
I mean, this is HBO, home mm-hmm. box office.
Home yeah. box
there's
office.
There's a standard.
We yeah. really wanted to do well.
Yeah. It people, was shot in England. Like,
it was
there's
in
just,
England.
We yeah. want we want to meet the situation.
Yes.
And
yes.
I hope you both did.
And we
I
did.
You did, yeah.
I think because we banded together and we were a team and we had each other's back. And as Kyle said to me in the first scene we did, he came over and said, you know, Armando said, hey, why don't you guys just ramp up and like improvise a fight? And he came over and he said, you're not going to tell me what you're going to say, are you? And I said, I'm never going to.
Yeah.
And he goes, all right. Turns out without any formal training in improv, he's better than I would ever be. So
no.
anyway.
I always resent people like that, but I am happy you're here, Kyle. But it does seem
but I resent
like,
you. I get that a lot. I get a lot of we
you
resent
know
what
you, it is,
but
Kyle,
it's fine
it's
that you're
that
here.
The two of us went through a whole improv training and then you meet other actors who are just brilliant in improvising, who did nothing.
I'll
and
qualify
received
that.
No
and not to be humble,
training.
But I am not trained. And so I am very intimidated by stage. And like when I did your podcast, Jessica, and you and Lennon carried me.
That's
and I happily
true.
Was carried. On screen, I think it is a different muscle on screen. And I can vamp enough on screen and make it funny enough, knowing that there's a cut coming, knowing that they
no,
won't use
Kyle,
anything bad.
It's 'cause he's such
no,
a good
I'm fine with it. I mean, I'm proud of my work, but like I legitimately respect improv too much on stage when I watch along, you know, when I go to UCB or something. It's not that I'm being humble. I'm more like a fan. I'm like just, oh my gosh, like, mm-hmm. they're making this up as they go along. I mean, I know there's a thing. You know, like, I'm sort of just a nerdy fan when I watch it because I decided long ago that I wasn't going to like commit to that the way
right.
that
well,
so
you
many
had
actors
your tap
are,
dancing.
You, know,
you had
I
your tap dancing.
To be, man, I was committed to tap.
Come again?
Kyle also took a tap dancing class in London with me in an old rectory and it came with his sneakers on and he was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, and
yeah,
this this in preparation for a scene no. or this is recreational?
There's a history. I took tap dancing for like 2 weeks right when I moved to LA in the late 90s just for fun.
He
I wasn't
was
even
working
acting
at
by the way.
Tower Records.
Yeah, yeah.
I am stunned to the core.
And he was driving a shitty car and I believe when he went on his first date with his wife there were tap shoes in your back seat.
She found it in my single bachelor apartment. She found them in the closet, probably lost, thinking there was another room. There was no other room. She thought she opened the door thinking there was maybe more to the apartment than there was. But there was just a gross closet with tap shoes featured.
Guys, you know, I don't know Kyle that way. I've always appreciated your work and have known
Likewise.
You really through Jessica. But I remember seeing you really the first time I think we interacted was at a Mom's Demand Action
oh,
meeting.
Yeah, in Los
at, yeah at the JCC.
Classic Kyle. Right. Why was Kyle at a mom's demand action meeting? Because he's always trying to learn and better himself.
Yeah. And I am curious how you got involved with mom's demand, and because you were the only man there.
I feel like I've been to other
meetings where there
meetings
were men
where there were more men. Yeah. And I think it was like, it was the big, it was starting to really blow up a little bit, and it was the big movement that was going to, is now what it is, mm-hmm. you know? And I think, I don't think there's anything particularly, I think you see a massacre or you see the numbers of people killed every day. And if like, it was just like, okay, well, what can I do? And so, by the way, I could do a gazillion things more. I need to do more, go more to those meetings and stuff. But I think that's an amazing organization. And yeah.
Now we have to say 99% of the movies he watches are Tom Cruise movies. Yeah. So now what are he watching?
Very emotional third act to Mission Impossible 7.
Kyle has a dream of being an action star. And I'm so sorry I say dream as if it will never be realized. But he has even practiced and shown us what a run across a bridge looking back.
I love to see that. I wish this wasn't an audio medium. Yeah.
It's so good. And he wants it so much. And there is a great scene in Avenue 5 coming in which he gets to live some of that dream.
That's
which
thrilling.
She really validated me during that.
But what is crazy to me, Kyle, is that you do love these characters that are like hyper masculine, but yet inside you have this, you know, you're a Renaissance man in how you feel things. No, I find that fascinating too, because you're obviously drawn to those.
Would love to know your signs whenever you're ready to share them.
Like Virgo situations?
Correct.
Virgo, yeah.
You're a Virgo, Kyle?
September 10th, right? Is that Virgo? Yeah.
Kyle!
Yeah, are you both Virgos?
I'm like a triple Virgo.
Yeah.
Do you know your rising and moon?
Uh-uh. Jesus Christ, we got to get up to Heidi Rose Roberts immediately. Yeah. How have I not dragged him? You and I should go together, quite honestly, and get a reading.
Seriously.
Kyle, we're both Virgos. Of course we are.
I have no idea what that means. Because we're very opposite too, wonderfully. And I've noticed this about my friends over the years, is that my best friends are usually opposite. Mm-hmm. They're either like big city balanced folk, like, where are you from?
Long Island.
Long Island. So you guys would have been like a girl from the big city, like was really exotic to me, like from Mishawaka, Indiana. Like that, like you, I mean, it's just like, they probably saw R-rated movies when they were like eight.
I'm going to make a sweeping generalization. Sure. I like people from the Midwest.
Me too. My nanny currently is from the Midwest, and she could not be a more lovely
And I like
human
men
being.
From the Midwest.
Where's Paul from?
Long Island.
He's Long Island.
But like Matt McConkie's from the Midwest. Yeah. There's a sensitivity, a sincerity, and
sincerity.
A sort of openness sincerity. To being sincere that I think for other men on in other places is very vulnerable. And I love that.
Let me just say a moment. You know, Kyle was also part of, now I think we've spoken about this on the podcast. Who knows what order these things are airing or if it ever airs.
Chaos.
But about how I was having what I like to call my nervous breakdown right before I left for London. And then I came to London and I was so happy. And Kyle was a huge part of that and with me during that because it was all new and nothing was about cancer. And to be honest, like Kyle was like the only one there who knew what I had been through. But I kind of went back for just a tad second to my old way of we had had a hard time on set or something, not a hard time, but like it, I was worried. I wasn't doing a good enough job. Okay. We were in
I can't imagine you as a performer ever worrying about
that. Oh, I worry about it constantly. Gosh, while I am
you're
saying
so
the
brilliant,
words,
Jessica,
I'm worried
that
about
I cannot
it. Well,
imagine you having like a
you were
moment
hilarious
of insecurity.
Last night, by the way. Come on. That conference room scene was Come on just. Now.
I'm constantly worried. I was fired from my first two jobs. I'm sure that it will happen again every minute
That's
of the
crazy.
Day. But we're in this pub called the Holly Bush, and it was
about 400 years old,
literally from the 1600s. Okay. And we're in and it's Zach Woods and myself and Zach's lovely girlfriend and Dan, and we were having dinner. And I said, I just feel like I'm just screwing up this job. And Kyle stops everything. Now he had had a few drinks. But he said, you know what? No. He goes, how about this? I love you. This guy loves you. This guy loves you. Okay. And how about you start loving yourself? And I my mind was blown.
And yeah. Like, now dip into that shepherd's pie and shut your face.
And I was like, God, that's the kind of Midwestern sincerity you're talking about. But yeah. Also like, and then I, from that day forward in London, I was like, you're right. I'm going to love myself. Because why the fuck not?
You know what I love about East Coast versus Midwest? And I've talked about this with other Midwesterners that have noticed it. It's interesting you say about Midwest people. I have... First of all, I think being like Midwest, middle class, I was also like middle-ish child. There's five of us, but like, by the way, I did not grow up in like a particularly political or at all woke. I mean, they're very middle of the road, very wonderful, warm people, but nothing like, you know, they're probably like Reagan Democrats in the 80s. And then they slowly evolved to be a little more progressive. But I look at my friends that did not have sisters and I wonder, well, I wonder if I just was slightly just like, I wasn't afraid of periods. Like, I never joke about a guy being grossed out about periods. Like from a very early age, I was like, that's kind of lame. Like, why would you like?
You were swimming in tampons.
Yeah.
I was also just remembering, I have a couple of things, stories that I want Kyle to tell because they made me laugh so hard. But we were doing a fight scene in Avenue 5 where like, you know, I get pushed and I fall down and then.
We weren't fighting.
And Kyle defends me, but I fell and I farted so loud.
Oh my God, this is so good.
Jessica, I am mortified.
I fell and then it was like.
She's in this long flowing floral dress, by the way, in the middle of this fight with the whole cast there, by the way, in a very long day.
And we're mic'd. Because you never know, like, where people are going to stand. So we are mic'd within an inch of our life. And I fell in that hour. I could not recover from this. I would have stood up and said, it's a wrap. It's a self-wrap. Like,
it's career wrap for June.
It's a career wrap. But there are three cameras on us, and you don't know who's shooting you. And Kyle and I tried to continue the scene by looking away from laughing because it was the...
it was really... It solidified our nuance. Like it was a great moment in our, I guess, 10-year relationship of like... We are a married couple. Like, we didn't have to say it. Like, I heard it. I gave you a glance. You glanced back. We acknowledged it happened. I knew that you didn't feel bad. You were more amused by it. I was like, oh, good. Then I can laugh. We're going to talk about this in exactly 5 minutes.
And like, because if the British people heard it, they certainly are not going to say anything. Okay? They are not going to say it.
Yeah.
We were just
It was dying. Perfect. It was perfectly timed. Oh, the sound, it was
everything. Oh, God. The other thing, the other story, just briefly, so I make sure it happened. Kyle, you know, as we all are, we're journeymen. You know, we pack up our bindle and we go from movie to movie and show to show, okay? And Kyle was doing a movie who was it and what was the movie?
While we were in London?
No, this was the, and that's a wrap on.
Oh, it's Marriage Story.
No, and this is the other way. Yeah. It was a Marriage Story?
It's Marriage Story, yeah.
Okay. So, can you tell the story
about Marriage Story?
Wait, and also, this is how we are a married couple. I'm like, Kyle, tell the one about, because he is.
It is, all right, so for the listeners out there, keep in mind, my name is Kyle Bornheimer, in case you don't know. So, Kyle Bornheimer is my name.
Okay.
And so, I was part of Marriage Story. And we shot this now like 2.5 years ago. That movie came out so much longer after we shot it. But it was like 3 a.m. at a courtroom scene. And it was Ray Liotta, Scarlett Johansson, Adam Driver, Laura Dern.
Whoa.
It was, and then me.
And you'd only done how many days on the movie? Four?
I did. Yeah, right? I did. Yeah, about 4 days.
Okay. This wasn't the movie where the craft service guy thought you were
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Offering him special smoothies.
For one day and then realized I wasn't. And not that he was being a jerk the next day, but he just was putting a little less effort into me the next day.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, he should.
And okay. I completely.
Same movie. Okay. So. So it's your last day on set.
So it's my last day on set. It's a nighttime. So we, you know, you two know, but I'll inform people on your last day of a shoot. The assistant director will sort of wrap you to the crew and say, that's a wrap on so-and-so, and everyone claps. That means you're done with the shoot because several actors probably are still filming, but your role is done.
Yeah. I never know how to react in that.
Exactly.
Moment.
And it's a strange thing. Yeah, it's very nice, but a lot of actors are like, it's more uncomfortable than anything.
Yeah.
But it was the wrap day for Ray Liotta. Laura Dern, Scarlett Johansson, and me.
And this is awkward.
Yeah. And I'd only been there for a few days. And the very wonderful assistant director who does this, who I just met, and she had just met me. So she's like 3 a.m. and she begins to rap everyone. She's like, that's a rap on Ray Liotta. And everyone just goes wild. They're just
kidding. I'm wondering, do you go first?
You
or
go
last?
First. Yeah.
And as soon as it starts, I'm like, oh, don't worry about me. And I actually go to the sound booth to get my sound equipment off, see my microphone off, just thinking maybe I'll be forgotten, which is totally fine. I'm clapping for Ray.
Yeah. You know?
And then, and that's a rap on Laura Dern. And everyone goes crazy, starts clapping. And then, and that's a rap on Scarlett Johansson. Everyone goes crazy. They're clapping. I'm like, oh, please don't. That's okay. You can end it now. You don't have to say anymore. And then she found
a natural conclusion.
I was hoping that it would just sort of like there was a fade out.
Yeah.
And so it's a long hallway. I'm at the sound person. I see this very nice AD, assistant director, kind of walking towards me about 30 feet away, making eye contact. And my eyes are saying, you don't have to. And hers are saying, I should probably do this, but I also don't know your name. So she's looking at me and she goes, and that's a wrap on it. She has a list of names on her side that she starts to reach for, but then she's like, that's too late now. I've already said that's a wrap on Carl Hornbauer.
Carl. Carl Hornbauer. And so his kid
swing. She took a swing.
She did. I admire it. There was a smattering of applause, but by that time I was just enthralled with the whole process. Again.
And that's Carl for humbleness that you're
again, everyone. My name
into.
Is Kyle Bornheimer. Carl Hornbauer came out.
So his sons, when they pick him up at the airport and hold a sign, sometimes it says Carl Hornbauer. Lennon was once introduced on a red carpet as and they were like, looks at it and it was a red carpet and they often announce your name because nobody knows who we are. Yeah. And then the photographers know who to write down. And they said, and presenting Lemon Parsnips. It's Lennon Parham. Okay.
Oh, Lemon Parsnips and Carl Hornbauer need to go out on the town.
Anyway. This life is humiliating.
It's humiliating.
It is. Don't you think sometimes so much of the work that we all do at the stable is just sort of getting through that layer of humiliation and just embarrassment. Like, I have had to come to terms with, like, most of my life as an actor is either being uncomfortable, just physically, like, uncomfortable in my setting, or embarrassed.
Well, I'm interested to hear what Carl Hornbauer has to say.
Embarrassed. Did you nine or Raphael stuff?
Yeah. He is so happy to be on set, Kyle. He's also an eternal optimist. Listen to me. That
it's my best place.
Right, but I get schooled on the regs by Kyle because I'll complain near constantly about the hours, the heat, that I need a snack. And in London, they don't give you snacks.
I don't like the way they do that.
Well, there's no craft services.
You are
meant to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner like an adult person. Yeah. And as Hugh Laurie said, he always felt like, why are these American babies needing to eat constantly?
Don't worry about it, Hugh.
They give us a bunch of fruit that looks like whatever the London Zoo animals didn't want.
Yeah.
They put in a bag and they say, here, if you want to snack on something, snack on this. But Kyle always says to me, that's part of the job. You're lucky to be here. And that's one of the things I want to bring up in couples therapy is that he doesn't allow me all the time to have the negative feelings I want. But when I think about it, Kyle's absolutely right. We are lucky to be there, and where you put your attention grows. So if I'm busy bitching about how long the day is or how hot it is, that's all I'm focusing on instead of how lucky I am to be here.
There's probably a balance there. I probably go too far the other way. I bet we probably meet wonderfully in the middle. Because that's what I was going to say earlier about Midwest. I have had a lot of conversations the last 5 or 10 years that I'm not direct enough, and that there's a way to be direct and succinct with people without being a jerk. And there's a lot, because I've been accused of having like passive aggressive offs with other Midwesterners where like my friend's mom, who's from Paris, came into a room one time and my friend and I, who he's from Oklahoma, could not make a decision on like the evening, like, well, whatever you want to do. Well, what do you want to do? She was so annoyed by us. She was like, you're having a passive aggressive off because you know, just say what you want. And I think I've been trying to get very direct But I wasn't bringing up Don Draper from Mad Men. There was some tone. He had plenty
That's
of,
your
plenty
time
of flaws.
Period, by the way. That's your time period.
Yes, of course.
But then you think of that time period and it was so fucked up in so many ways.
Well, you're you're a good version of that.
But it would have been lost. Anyone, you know.
Well, you probably would have been eaten up in the world. Yes. Sure. But you wouldn't have been cheating on your wife, but that is who you are.
If we could transplant like modern sensibilities or the sensibilities we're aiming for into
the late 50s, early 60s. Niceties of the 50s life. Yeah.
And
you know,
suits.
And suits.
I like
suits.
To see you in a suit.
Is a big thing. It's really about suits.
Yeah.
It's all about a suit.
Yeah.
But Kyle, you were saying that you're working on being able to speak directly about what you need.
Because there's a lot, by the way, probably historically as a white male, it's probably easy for me to say like, we're happy to be here. But I think for other people saying I'm happy to be here has probably been an issue. Like they've probably been told their lives, especially women in certain industries, like just be happy that you're here. Yeah. So I don't want it to come out like it's not like it that, you know?
It's like,
well, I guess I think though that so much of the job is also just, there's the acting, which is a small part of it, turns out. It's 10%. But then there's just like creating, my issue with film and TV sets is always that it's just not an actor's medium, that it is there's so much attention on the technical stuff and the crew and the lights and the sound and all of the stuff. And you're just expected as an actor to just arrive and be ready.
Right.
So that's like my big, and it's why sometimes I do understand, some actors behave terribly and that's absurd, but I do understand actors who
I just behave terribly to Kyle.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That seems to be the
Kyle
space
to
for
take
that.
Swallow it.
But I do think, because Brooklyn and I have this dynamic too, where she's someone who never seems to be hungry, never seems to be tired.
Yeah,
and
she's
I like
a Disney character.
Yeah. And I walk in a rage about what this one said and where I parked and but sometimes I'm like, I think not to get too actory, but I have to be in touch with every need. And because that's also a part of the work.
Yeah.
Which is like, I need food. I need to sleep. Yeah. I need.
Yeah.
So I do think that actors, I mean, I did one indie film where there was no hair and makeup trailer and you just arrived and started acting.
Right.
And I was like, oh, wow. That is a part of the process in a way. And so I do think actors are calling on their emotions, calling on their vulnerabilities and should be taken care of.
Interesting. And for me, and I agree with that, but for me, I'm always, because of what I went through, so obsessed with how unhealthy that this lifestyle is and being on set for more than
16 hours a day. Yeah.
10 hours, 8 hours is too much. Yeah. It's like, so for me, I'm like, how can I get frustrated? Because I'm like, oh, it can be done better. It can be, but then it takes what it takes. It takes the time
but
it takes.
But you have to have people that, you know, that stick up for, you know, you're like a union, you know, you have to have someone, whatever department you're in, that's like, you know, by the way, we're supposed to have this and this. And even if you don't have to demand it or be a jerk about it every time, but you're just like, you have to create if it was just me's out there, then that'd be horrible. If it was just you's out there, it'd probably be better, actually. Because it's not like you're a jerk.
On my own set. No,
you
and
did
I will
a great
say
job
Avenue
on your
5
own
was,
set.
Was run so well in terms of our hours and how we were respected and treated was so wonderful. Many other sets, and I would say like the less funny the thing is, the more mistreated you are.
Right.
But like for me, I'm playing house. Like that third season, I had a doctor's note that said, you may not be on a set more than 10 straight hours. And and I had so many people say, it's not possible to Lennon and I, it's not possible. It's not, well, guess what? It was 100% possible. We did our best work. Mm-hmm. There was only organic food, meaning we like offered less options, but it was all organic, you know, and people were really happy.
I mean, that's the thing.
That's,
like,
that's my own soapbox. But,
and I also do think it depends on who's number one on the call sheet. Like I have found more and more, I mean, I've never had the opportunity to be number one, so I wouldn't know. But that person,
uncomfortable and embarrassed,
that person is really setting a tone in terms of just the leadership and like what the vibe and culture is on set.
Well, Laurie is the captain of our ship that is lost in space. There is not a more welcoming, funny, and genteel man.
And rolls with it. And,
I've heard the same about Ed O'Neill on Modern Family.
You know,
can I ask you, Kyle, because we are at the Jane Club and talk a lot about caretaking and valuing caretaking, and Jessica mentioned you've also taken care of a parent, as have I. What does caretaking mean in your own life? And how do you identify as a caretaker to children?
Yeah, I mean, I thought a lot about, like, my dad passed now a couple years ago. But yes, there were 3 years where it's interesting. Have you heard that term, the sandwich generation, which is what we are?
So can you tell me?
That's like when you are sort of caretaking your parent and your own kids, right? Is that kind of like?
That's exactly it.
And you're really sensitive to that. You're aware that that's what you're doing. And because I think our generation grew up more, I think it's more of a surprise to us because, oh, shit, I got to do, I think, not that we were selfish, but that we were selfish.
Well, it's also our generation is, I believe, a little different just in the age gap between us and our parents because our parents are starting to be a little older than past generations because they had us a little bit later. Right. So we're sandwiched.
And we had our kids later too. So we have young kids while, and that's haven't been in this position yet. So I'm interested to hear what you
and it's. I did a lot of thinking about that when I literally, my dad had Alzheimer's, I'd literally be like dealing with a tantrum of his at his home and then come home and deal with the tantrum with my kids.
Wow.
It's funny. I had this thought the other day when I was like pleading with my kids to understand where I was coming from or like, you know, read a room, guys. Don't you see that dad's trying here and you're being assholes about it? And then I was like, it's not our job to like this. This is a thought I'm formulating. I don't know if I'm good at it yet, but to like teach an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old to like empathize with you. It's to give them tools to start to roll with those situations. Like it's like I was kind of losing my temper. My kid was losing his temper. No one was teaching. No one was helping anyone in that moment. Me telling them, can't you sympathize with a 44-year-old dad? Like,
no, dad, impossible. I'm not. And they shouldn't.
And they shouldn't. And I was like, oh, I need to stop that tract completely and go from like, here's the tools to happen that you can use in any conflict.
And to model it. Yeah, that's the hardest part. Best way to do that is not to speak it, but to show them. And but you can't do it all the time.
But I think the caretaking, and I want to hear about your experience too, because I did not nail it. I judge myself a lot about being like finding time for caretaking. Like this is the 2 hours I'm going to be with my dad and I'll do that.
But Kyle, you went. And you, so
all my siblings did. We all did.
I know you did, and you all did an amazing job. But I will cry every time I think of this. Kyle realized that when his dad was singing, he would come back to himself, and so he would go and bring a karaoke machine and do karaoke at the Alzheimer's home at 5 p.m., which is their time where it's like sundowner syndrome, right? Yeah, they start to get really agitated, and you love to sing.
Yeah.
He did have a band called Soft Supply, which is something to
I think it'll be playing us out in a few minutes.
We absolutely
we can get our hands on that.
But yeah, Kyle, tell me what that was like and see your dad come back.
Yeah. And I should do that. I should go back to that place and do it and not to be do-gooder-age. I think when you do something for someone else, like, and especially if it's a loved one I think it's therapeutic for everybody. And I think you also become your best self and you figure out better solutions for them. That was a good moment of like, noticing something, not doing it because these are the 2 hours I got to take care of my dad, but like noticing he was thriving and then building on that, noticing that I forgot about all my troubles and stresses and was being my best self as just being in the moment, forgetting. Also, when, you know, you're of a certain age, you're still ambitious, you're still like hustling out there trying to get shit. You forget to just slow down and be there with your loved ones, which I think is half the battle. Not only because it's like just being there with them is good, but because your best ideas about how to be better for them and their caretaking. But I think, I mean, it's a really interesting question. I think everyone needs to think about it more. What have your thoughts on it?
I felt it was the honor of my lifetime to take care of my father when he was sick, and sick in a very different way. So I never had to sort of lose him in the way it sounds like you lost your dad, but I did see him suffer enormously. I think about that time with a 1-year-old and taking care of an elderly parent, and I just was depleted. And also had siblings who were sharing in the, I want to say burden, but it's not the right word, the caretaking, the work of caretaking. So I look back on it and I'm really grateful that I was at a point in my life in terms of being able to travel to see him, having the resources to be with him at the end of his life. I'm so grateful and proud of myself for getting to a point in my life where I could do that. I
it
know
must
not
have
everyone
been so
can.
Hard too. And I know you've talked about this, June, to me, but to see your parent in pain seems to me like one of the worst things you could possibly ever witness.
Yeah.
How did you guys, and people ask me, well, how did you do it? You're like, well, I didn't have a fucking choice.
Yeah.
You know, getting through whatever
and
I got
to
through.
To be honest, Jess, though, there are things that I still, to this day, there are certain memories or certain moments where I'm like, I'm not ready to touch that. Right. Like, I don't think I'm not here like on the other side of it. I'm like, oh, there's things that I'm like, you're for later because that was too terrible to go to.
Right. Yeah.
So I
in
haven't.
The moment, you mean you avoided that or thinking about it?
Not in the moment, just now. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, there's some stuff that went down, some regrets I have about not advocating for certain things. You know, my dad was in the ICU for 6 weeks. He came out with bed sores that didn't need to happen. Like, I really beat myself up about that.
We had very similar situations with hospital stays that we, you know, we should sue them and we should bring this to the attention of the California Health Board, you know.
Exactly. And, like, there's, you know, and then, you know, there's a part of me that's like, what happened happened and I can't go back. But I still, my dad's health issues were, there were certain things, decisions he made, to be honest, that I still regret because they were unnecessary. But it was, I also have to honor, like, that was his journey with his body that was his to take. And during it was very frustrating. There were times I wanted him to go to the hospital if he had a fever, and I'd be here on the phone getting my best friend, Kate Grossman, to call him, who's a doctor, and demand. And I tried screaming, then I tried crying. Like, there's all the sort of high drama and trauma of trying to get a person to do what's right for them. And ultimately, I'm like, that was my dad's journey. And, you know, how I'm processing it now, because it's been, you said 3 years for you, Kyle. For me, it was 2016, right before Trump was elected. However, I guess 4 years. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I think looking back, for those listeners who are in the sandwich generation that we're describing and are taking care of small children and elderly parents, I think now I didn't realize at the time what it was doing to me. And I had no energy and I was just depleted. I was just really depleted. And then after, I think I did so almost too much. I mean, I started the Jane Club. I wrote a book. Like, I was like, I went so hard in the other direction because I don't think I realized what kind of just mental energy it was taking
and trauma.
From me.
Yeah. It's traumatic. Trauma. It's totally traumatic.
Yes.
Yeah. To witness.
Yeah. It was very, very hard. And it was an honor. It was a total honor. So I don't want to describe it in a way that, you know, I think sometimes people are so scared of death and so scared of illness that there's a 10 there. It was really an honor for me to do that work with my dad.
Yeah.
But and very intimate and very beautiful for us, as much as it was difficult. But
I do think you're probably, they're onto something with the way that we process death and sickness needs to, I think, because like, you're like, you said, in the hardest moments, we're also the most intimate. We're also the most honorable, you know, where, you know, and the world goes away and you're just with your loved one trying to make them comfortable. And I think if we had more harmony from an early age, it, you know, there's less mystery about it and more just like, this is life and it's rough and it's good and it's bad, it's down, and you're there for each other, and things are ugly and gross and there's shit and there's,
well,
you
I think
know,
in the olden days,
you know,
right?
Yeah.
You had your parent living with you, like, you know,
even processing death and having bodies in homes and being with bodies.
Well,
and right now it's
I was
so
12. Didn't you see like at least 7 or 8
yes
dead
of course
bodies?
Because we were Catholic and at wakes, but you know, but truthfully I do think there's something to death being so sanitized in our country and we're all trying to run away from it at a crazy pace because it's like it's so kind of sanitized and mysterious. And in other countries there's, you know, you take care of dead bodies and you, I mean, I know this is dark, guys, but you do,
again,
you
we're
know,
diving deep.
Yeah. I mean, my one of my sisters, I mean, I think I might have told this story before. When my mom died, I, you know, was it a Long Island? We were at a Long Island mortuary and they had done her makeup like a drag queen, you know, unfortunately.
Right. I'm going to take my cues from you if I can laugh at this.
And you would have wanted to be in there, quite honestly, doing the eyeliner. Well,
my sister then went home and got my mom's makeup and hair tools and came back. I could not, actually.
No, God, no.
But my oldest sister did, which I was blown away by.
That's really something.
That's really something.
Because your mother, that would have mattered to her.
Totally. And we did end up closing the casket because we just did. But I still was like, yeah, we're participants in this. We're not like, I don't know. I do think we would fundamentally change our obsession with youth, our obsession with, you know, staying young. I mean, I know Jessica and I talk a lot about skincare and various things we shoot into our skin and lights and lasers and all sorts of stuff.
Tom Cruise can teach you guys a few things.
Yeah. And this won't stop that. Yeah. I want to talk about Scientology in a second, but
we don't have that time to go into that. And by the way, none of the Scientology will ever dampen Kyle's love of T. Cruise. To the point where we saw him on the lot and I almost went up to him to get an autograph?
I'm doing a lot of compartmentalizing with him. Like it's on screen and then I'm just like,
You're gonna have to.
I mean, I'm ignoring all the other stuff until I can't. And then I'll just have to.
I get it.
You know, listen, give it up.
By the way, I know this was an abrupt segue for our listeners, but I do apologize, but you're just gonna have to go on this ride with us. By the way, I know in my heart of hearts, I do have major problems with the Church of Scientology, and I really am baffled by our industry's acceptance of it. It seems insane to me, but
I'm so
upset
with the turn you're about to take.
Okay,
is it
going to
say that there's something good about
never. God, never. What I will say is I think if Tom Cruise were to walk in here and shine his light and energy on me, because you know he connects full body, full genitalia.
Yeah,
he's
crotch out.
He's crotch out with his cock out. Yeah. And if I was in that, you know, in the line of fire, I'd be helpless.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm aware of that.
I think a movie called In the Line of Fire would be a great movie for Kyle to star in. But I will also say that we did see him from afar and I did text Kyle. Can you get here? Because I was by myself. No, I'm nice. Like, Kyle, please. Yeah. He's here.
He was in the airport. It was like the last day.
He was in London. He was on the lot.
Wow.
I will say that from afar, he was wearing like a high heeled boot.
And well, he's got to wear heels.
Didn't care for it.
Yeah.
And again, is that a gender stereotype? Yes. I don't want to see how tiny. He's a tiny little man.
He's a tiny little man. Well, they all are, though, Jess.
I understand
they all
that. But so
are.
Tiny men with huge heads.
Yep. I need a huge headed man to want to have sex with. I don't want to have sex with a tiny man.
Well, I don't think he's ever been. Yeah, the interesting thing about Cruise is like.
Are they asking for it from you? Nobody's asking. That's why I have to be the most sexually aggressive cast member of Avenue 5.
Are the tiny men propositioning you?
I don't like tiny teeth. And
I don't think he has tiny teeth. I think he has
he's got a
big
great
choppers.
Set of veneers, but like, I don't want a man in a high heel or like own it. You know what I mean? I don't want you in a high heeled boot just to what? Do a smoke and mirrors routine on me?
I totally agree. He's wearing lifts. I think a lot of them are wearing lifts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not interested.
Okay. And no, I don't think anyone's saying.
I don't think, by the way, I don't think he's ever been, it's interesting that the pantheon that he's in, like he's not like, yeah, I don't think there are a lot of women that like think that he's like
a heartthrob. He's a sex symbol. He absolutely is. And from
I agree with Kyle.
I think after 40 years of him, though, people would put him way down. Like I think when he hit and it was like Teamy Bopper-ness was maybe.
I'd rather fuck Harrison Ford.
Oh, yes.
I think we all
every
would.
Day of the week. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I think people are charmed by him. And I think you would be too. I think if he turned his energy on you, it's a magnetic energy.
Fine.
And I think it's less about his height. I don't look at him. I don't think he's like particularly fuckable.
No.
But I don't think many people are.
But I would fuck him in Top Gun era before I
absolutely.
Knew he wore heels.
Yeah, I just think
that's what I
guess he was the only one out there and it was like pushed in front of you and it was like told, you were told that. But if he was like pushed at the same, like if it was him like walking down an aisle at that time along with like more like traditional, like Harrison Ford and
Viggo
Mortensen or something. I think he had the boyish charm then.
Sure.
And now sure. that's something different.
I'm so glad that in the same breath we were talking about burying your father, that then we talked about would we fuck again, that Tom was a, Cruise.
That's the kind of the deep dive. Those are the moves you gotta be on
listen,
board for.
I want to thank you for being such a wonderful friend. I want to thank you for when he found out I had cancer. I got a voicemail that I should have saved that said, "It's Kyle. I heard. Where are you? I love you. I'm coming to wherever you are." And that's the kind of, if you get stuck in Mexico, which I did, you call Kyle and he will figure out a way to help you.
I believe it.
And I want to apologize to the deep divers that are listening for falling in love with Kyle and never having a chance with him because he has a wonderful wife and a family. Yeah. Because they broke the mold when they made this one. They broke the mold when they made this one.
And I'm so excited you're raising two boys, Kyle.
Yeah, no,
and
I want to talk more about that.
I know. We've just scratched the surface.
I put her hand in the ring, and I'd like to bring back arranged marriages because
I'd like to put my own sons on the list as well as potential suitors.
Yeah, exactly.
Kyle, do you have anything you want to plug? I know Jessica mentioned some things, but is there any way our listeners can find you on social meds?
But yeah, well, I mean, Jess and I are on Avenue 5 right now on HBO, which is just lovely madness every week and very fun and profane. And I have a voice in Onward, the new Pixar movie, which I'm really proud of. And then you can find me at Kyle Bornheimer on Twitter and Kyle Bornheimer 2075 on Instagram.
Wonderful. Deep divers, we will see you next week.
Welcome to Love Line. There's emotional roller coasters and a magic carousel that'll take you around and around. And welcome to Love Line. There's emotional roller coasters and a magic carousel that'll take you around and around.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free one-month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support this show is to rate and review.
And a huge thank you to Ann Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnnGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more.
We'll see you next time.